everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks on the other side of the glass. Tom, we had a little bit of rain last night up at the Buckmaster Bungalow, maybe half an inch or so, and luckily most of the heavy wind activity had died down before it reached us.
Yeah, when I was driving home around 6:15, closer to 6:30, I guess, there was a lot of buffeting on the roadway, and I thought it was just going to be localized over here in the southeastern part. And no, it all the way on I-10, all the way over to the northwest side, it was constantly buffeting and moving cars around and everything.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought we were going to be in for it really bad. But no, like you say, we had a few sprinkles. Mainly just the wind was the only factor.
Tim Steller, who is, like me, a weather hobbyist.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah. Can't think of anything else right now.
Yes, I know.
Nothing else going on in the world but our monsoon.
I know.
We had what I like to refer to as the perfect storm last night.
Yeah, I saw you posted that on
which
Facebook. Perfect storm.
It was just a moderate wind.
I would agree. That is one element
lightning
of the perfect storm.
Occasional lightning, but not overwhelming.
I would agree with that.
And just a steady rain that came and went for an hour.
Again.
Just very nice.
I wish every monsoon
storm Sunday wasn't like that. Yeah.
Was like that. Anyway, welcome to the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. We have five radio stations now under one roof here, part of the growing presence of Bustos Media here in Tucson. This one's 1030 KVOI, The Voice. My radio program now 14 and a half years, so in January we'll be entering our 15th year, and then in January 30, we'll enter the 37th year in broadcasting here in Tucson. As they say, Kate Kensky, who is with me in studio, I've known Kate forever. I didn't get off the bus yesterday, right, Kate? Great to see you, by the way.
Wonderful seeing you.
Our media partners, a couple of shout-outs. TucsonSentinel.com supports us, Green Valley News, and Saharita Sun. And our newest media, official media partner, is Tucson Agenda. But I must say that the Arizona Daily Star, where Tim Steller works as a renowned columnist and former Arizona Newspaper Association Columnist of the Year, is always very supportive of our work. Right, Tim?
Try to be, Bill.
I know you do. All right. I do want to mention also that when we do our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Now I'm going to formally interview introduce Dr. Kate Kensky, professor of communication and government and public policy at the University of Arizona, where she teaches political communication, public opinion, and research methods. She's a former editor of the International Journal of Public Opinion Research, currently an associate editor of Public Opinion Quarterly. Her book, The Obama Victory, How Media, Money, and Message Shaped the 2008 Election, has won several awards, and she's been very busy this summer, so it's serendipitous that she was able to carve out some time being in town, because she was down under in Australia attending the International Communication Association Conference. She is the Political Communication Division Director.
Chair.
Yep. Chair, there you go. And then she was also, this organization had an event like right after the Australia event in Milan, Italy. So she's really been on a whirlwind tour, right? All right, Kate, great to see you. Thank you very much for coming in. Let's begin with, by the way, when you travel, you were sharing with me something very interesting. There's what comes out of the conference, kind of the official, what your colleagues are saying, but like you, I agree. I like to talk to taxi drivers.
It's one of my favorite things to do.
Yeah.
I mean, I find that people in that particular occupation are, you know, often in their vehicles.
Yep.
They often listen to various forms of political talk radio, and they listen to them fairly deeply. And plus, they can give you the overview of what things are like in their area. And so I always enjoyed, you know, trying to get their opinions on politics.
Yeah, I have a cabbie in L.A. at LAX, listens to my show every day, somebody I met. on a taxi ride, actually, from where were we going? We were in Santa Monica and over to LAX, and he is a huge talk radio fan, and he heard, when I told him I did talk radio, he immediately went on the internet, looked me up, and could see that he could live stream the show. So he's probably right now listening out at LAX. But what did you generally think of the Republican convention? And conventions like this, do they mean as much, certainly, as they used to?
You know, not in the same way. I mean, when we think going back, you know, conventions were the time when, you know, candidates were decided coming out of the primaries. That, of course, may actually happen again. We'll have to see about that. But in that sense, you know, not so much. Once campaigns became 18-month events rather than, you know, 2-3-month events, that changed the dynamics. They're nevertheless still important. They're usually the launching point for what the rest of the general election campaign is going to look like. And they're important for drumming up enthusiasm among the base.
Mm-hmm. Here's Tim Stellar.
Boy, I've really noticed that confidence and enthusiasm from Republicans, especially those who are, you know, politically involved and strong Trump supporters. Some telling me that, you know, oh, this election's over and that sort of thing, Trump's going to win. Is this just the typical, like, wave of enthusiasm or crest of enthusiasm that happens at during
convention
a convention?
Bounce,
or is there actually something that's going on that suggests that there is a change in the election that would suggest Donald Trump will come back and be reelected?
Well, I mean, I think that any time if you look like at the polls across time, everyone always gets a little bit of a bump, in part, although I'm not sure, we'll have to look at what the media streaming looks like this time. It used to be that parties would give the other party kind of a courtesy and take more ads off the air so mm-hmm. that you heard one stream. And of course, now we listened in a fractured media environment. And I'm guessing that same thing didn't quite happen. We'll have to see when the gross rating points mm-hmm. are published and all that.
Yeah, I want, before you pick up, I want to talk a little bit about bounce, because when Ronald Reagan, the assassination attempt in 1981, there was a 21-point bounce in the week after that assassination attempt. With former President Trump, there was hardly any bump at all. So it just shows how, well, I don't know what it shows, actually. What would your take be on that?
Well, I do think that one key difference is that any time the presidency as an institution feels like it's going to be attacked.
Yes.
Right? This also happens during times of war, right? Mm-hmm. There's usually are moments where we coalesce around that leadership, mm-hmm. almost regardless of what else is taking place. And
yes.
So that's why that bounce was more significant. Mm-hmm. We're now in an environment where, you know, the polarization is at an all-time high, and it was for a candidate, not the presidency being attacked itself. Mm-hmm. So that can explain a little bit of a difference.
Okay.
And also, again, people are just listening to, you know, what that assassination attempt meant mm-hmm. in their various preferred media streams that are tailored towards their likes and dislikes.
We all have the echo chambers, don't we, these days?
We do.
Yeah.
We do.
Okay, Tim, back to you. Sorry, I've kind of cut you off.
No, that's very interesting. And yeah, and also, I wonder if this kind of plays into what you were just saying, but if opinions aren't just so hardened about each of the people involved or all of the people involved here, that you're not going to get a lot of change from anyone, even if in this case there was an attempted assassination. Are you saying that?
Yes. I mean, I would say it's difficult. I mean, what you hopefully found was, I mean, you know, any time I think that our candidates, regardless of whether or not you like them, they're from your party, are attacked, that is a problem for the system, right? You can't have a system be democratic with a little d and, you know, have people, you know, getting, you know, opponents being, you know, taken out. That is fun. I mean, that hurts the whole system overall. And so hopefully there is some embracing of understanding that violence cannot stand. But again, in terms of, but that doesn't mean you necessarily swing towards the other side. Mm-hmm. And so I think you can be empathetic towards, I mean, it's scary. You know, opponent was, nearly
yeah,
killed.
Within half a quarter of an inch, maybe less of being killed.
Yeah. And that's huge. And hopefully people recognize that regardless how you feel about him as a candidate.
Right.
That's a problem for the system.
It is. And Tim, I do want to go back to the Trump speech last night. And it was billed, his handlers had been saying we would hear a different kind of tone. And I know you listened to, I listened to it live, but you listened to the replay, all 92 minutes of mm-hmm. it. What was your take? You told me before the show started today that we might be surprised
yeah.
with your take.
Well, okay, caveat is that I listened to it on double speed on YouTube.
Oh.
And and so, sure. For example, I know I have an acquaintance who's a Trump supporter who told me, I didn't like it. It rambled way too long.
Right.
But when you're listening double speed, it's only 45 minutes or an hour, you know?
Maybe.
So
maybe they should have run last night in double speed.
Right. So anyway, I'm well known as somebody who doesn't support Donald Trump for mm-hmm. many, many reasons. Mm-hmm. But I was, it's easy for me to just kind of slough off now the pot shots he takes at people. Mm. And I was surprised by the degree to which there was a positive vision or dream for the country that especially came through as a speech built to its ending, which I thought could be accessible to a broad public, you know, and it occurred to me, I have a dream that maybe this will become a campaign of dueling dreams for a positive vision for the country. Because to me, that's sold, you know, the dark vision of American carnage that he talked about in his famously or infamously in his inauguration.
Yes.
There was some of that in there, but it wasn't the emphasis the way it has
okay,
been in the
so
past.
Okay, so you picked up some optimistic overtones.
Well, yeah, it's always, obviously he always sets up this straw man of a country that's in a disaster and like, you look around and I personally don't see that. I see a country that's kind of mixed, you know, that's coming out of disaster maybe, but then says, I'm the one who can, mm-hmm. you know, change it into a positive American dreamscape. But anyway, yeah, I was, I don't know, after reading some reviews of it and before seeing it, I was expecting something a lot worse. And to me, it looked decent.
And that gets back to Dr. Kensky, the way that many people who were not watching they would have the interpretation of the speech filtered through their particular favorite echo chamber. Well, right?
Yes.
They'll hear the bites and then they'll hear the commentary and then that's the way they're going to get it.
One of the things I like to do is I sometimes record, you know, different stations so that I can then watch the media coverage. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Fox News pretty much was, you know, they talked about unification. Mm-hmm. And they had some lovely sound bites from that illustrated that point. Mm-hmm. So if you didn't watch the speech, but you're watching Fox News, that's the part you're going to see. If you listen to MSNBC, I think the word was, I mean, rambling, I think was the phrase that they used, and they chose different passages that showed perhaps some less coherence and, many issues being covered, not necessarily mm-hmm. in a coordinated fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you didn't listen, and most people don't,
no.
you know, listen to the debates, they don't listen to the conventions. And, you know, unless you're a diehard supporter of either side, in which case your mind was already made up before you paid attention to the event, mm-hmm. but you're getting them through these media filters, and they will choose the sound bites, and with 92, 93 minutes, you know, there'll be plenty mm-hmm. to choose from that reflect whatever it is they want to convey about the candidate. I think that the positive side for Trump is people are saying that he is, you know, preaching unification in a country that really needs, you know, some kind of unification. On the other side, if the worst thing that is that he was rambling, I don't know how negative that ultimately is. I mean, we know that campaigns are better when they choose, like, 1 to 3 points to focus on, mm-hmm. But that's not the worst thing you could say about a candidate.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting, and it reminds me that, you know, when I, as a person who doesn't like Donald Trump watch him speak, I am so used to him speaking that I slough off the references to MS-13 and to how migrants are destroying the country and stuff. Like, I just kind of like, whatever, even though I think it's ridiculous what he's saying. And so that allows me, even as an opponent, to focus on some stuff that I haven't heard before. Which, I don't know, I think maybe plays into your point.
All right, we'll take a break right here. More with Dr. Kate Kansky from the University of Arizona. Tim Steller is here from the Arizona Daily Star. It's Buckmaster on a Friday. We'll be right back.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Quality of Life Research Center has conducted more than 100 clinical trials in Arizona over its 20-year history. Because of their success, participants may have access to a variety of treatments under study that may not be available to people outside the trial. And participants may receive compensation for study-related time and travel. If you think you'd like to participate in a clinical trial, please visit QLMC.com to view our open trials and express interest.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We're in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, our telephone live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. My media co-host today, Tim Steller, award-winning columnist with the Arizona Daily Star, and our Friday Focus interview, Dr. Kate Kansky, professor of communication and government and public policy at the University of Arizona. Dr. Kansky, I was watching a piece a few weeks ago on PBS on the NewsHour, and they were show because the PBS teams with Maris, the Marist Group or Marist College for their polling, it was interesting that they did a piece about how they actually do the polling. And one of the takeaways was, for me anyway, it takes 100 calls typically to get one response that they can use now.
Not, unfortunately, not surprised. Response rates have been going down with the proliferation of cell phones, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not a surprise. Plus, there was such growth towards the end of the 90s and, you know, early 2000s in how much polling was done that there's basically fatigue because mm-hmm. you could get called all the time. And so that unfortunately does not surprise me.
Mm-hmm.
What people do to compensate is they tend to weight the data. And so if, for example, they don't have enough Black subjects that they think will be voters, they try to figure out what they think the population will be
uh-huh.
in that final outcome, and then they weight the data to that, or they weight it to the census.
Mm. So they multiply by some, like, what would it be, 1.1 or some small figure that would be more representative of
Of course, the danger of that is if you really don't have, let's say, very many Black males who are under 25, and then you try to weight based on one or two responses, it's quite possible that certain groups don't come out as representative they should be.
Right.
Not uncommon for older white females are the ones who are most likely to answer polls, and those will get underweighted because they are so, prevalent in the sample collection.
So I don't know how much faith we can put in polling.
Well, I mean, we've been doing weighting for a long time.
Okay.
And so that's not a surprise. I personally would not, and I've said this before on this show,
uh-huh.
I don't think you should look at single snaps in time
mm-hmm.
and treat those estimates from the polls as what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
We, of course, had long conversations about this in 2016. Right, where certain groups decided not to participate in polls, and then Trump was more successful than what those polls would have suggested.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. That said, I think what polls can tell you if you look across time is where certain people or certain policies over time appear to be headed. And so if Marist polling is consistent across time, you can look to see, well, does Trump look better than he did across time, or does it appear that he's lost momentum, like mm-hmm. either way, and mm-hmm. so I think that's what they're good for.
Okay, Tim, you were polled recently.
Yeah, I was called the other day. I don't even know yet who it was. I got to the point, I like to respond to polls when they call because I want to know who's polling and what they're asking. But I agreed to do it, and then the person read from the script, this call will be recorded for whatever quality assurance or something.
Yeah.
And I said, no thanks. I don't want to be recorded. I sometimes record them, but I don't want my voice to be recorded by them.
Yeah.
Because I don't know. I just don't want it to be used against me in any way. Who knows? I don't know who these people are, so.
That would be unusual for most polling.
It is. I mean,
groups.
Usually when we, like, from academic institutions,
yes.
we have to be really careful about confidentiality mm-hmm. and anonymity.
Mm-hmm.
And, I collect as minimal personally identifiable information as I have to for my respondents. Because really, I shouldn't need to know what what Adams, Smith said or, mm-hmm. Jill Brown, like any of that. That shouldn't matter to what I'm trying to accomplish when I'm doing my studies.
Mm-hmm.
And so what is more typical is to not collect that level of detail from a person, but at least they told you.
Right, of course. Yeah, I don't think it probably would have been used against me in any way, but I don't know, just snap judgment.
You wonder how AI is going to play into all of this.
Yes, I mean, I think it's actually, it's been a problem for a while in terms of when you do data collecting online, basically studies,
mm-hmm.
and the various, like Prolific, for example, which is one of the groups that will help you collect online data, and they do have ways that they look for AI, like how fast the response times are to questions, are there certain patterns to try to figure out when it's a robot responding or an algorithm responding rather than a real person.
Mm-hmm. What is the best way now to reach voters? And it's interesting the way, as I've asked this question through the years, we're going to get different answers. It used to be television ads, print I mean, where is it going now? Is social media now the preferred choice?
I mean, certainly for younger voters, because I think that there's some anecdotal evidence out there that that even news outlets are putting snippets of what they do on TikTok. And people are sharing. I do think that I suspect anyway that, you know, our collective attention span is pretty short.
Yes.
And so that's certainly important. Mm. Of course, you know, that doesn't mean that ads aren't important, because people still do watch TV. Mm-hmm. And, you know, often your vote, people who are more dependable in terms of actually getting out to vote. And so ads are still important. Really, I mean, it's all important. I think that, you know, anyone would be have a problematic campaign if they didn't attack them all. If you're interested in a specific type of demographic, one of the best places do radio ads, because musical preferences are, or you know, talk radio preferences are so tailored to particular demographics that radio ads are an incredibly effective way to find those, you know, specific communities that you want to reach.
Yep. Tim?
Yeah, I was thinking about what you were saying about how Donald Trump's, the polling related to Donald Trump originally in 2016 did not reflect reality. Well, first of all, has that changed? That is, has polling caught up with the people who were unwilling to say they supported Trump before?
I mean, I would say not really. I think it's just like, it was considered a loss. I will say that I think, you know, going into it, that any time an election is close, that, you know, you just have to be careful. I think people don't understand from polls that when you see a percentage that someone's up, you know, 52% to 48, that's just an estimate. And there's often a fairly huge, you know, confidence interval around that estimate. Yeah. And oftentimes with, you know, these major races, those confidence intervals overlap, meaning it's too close to call.
Right, right. What about the issue of abortion? I don't have the specifics at my fingertips, but my memory from the last few years is that whenever abortion rights initiatives have been on the ballot, or races have been decided often on the issue of abortion rights, that those on the sides of abortion rights have overperformed the polls. Am I remembering that correctly?
That sounds correct. Yeah.
And is that, do you know if that's, is that similar to this Trump effect, or why would that, that's why I was asking, because it's reminding me of how the Trump thing wasn't caught, and I don't think the abortion rights thing is being caught either.
You know, I think that the important thing to remember is that, you know, people are motivated often. If they're not motivated by the candidates because they don't really like the candidates, there are issues out there. And so if an issue is important to people, you know, certainly if it plays into their religious beliefs or their beliefs about fundamental, you know, freedom, that if there are ballot initiatives, it helps them come out. But it usually helps both sides to come out. So it's always kind of the middle that one has to be concerned about.
I want to talk about image. Image is so important in political advertising, and the image now, former President Trump, with his fist in the air and the American flag in the background, that is now going to become, I believe, one of the most iconic poses in U.S. political history. So how important is an image like that, certainly to the Trump campaign, where we saw it all over the convention floor, that particular image?
You know, I think it's incredibly important.
Right.
And I think that, you know, in absence of everything else, we would consider that almost like, you know, a movie level moment, right?
Yes.
A shot takes place, and yet he not only survives, but he puts his fist in there. And I think that is definitely a sign of power. Mm. And I think it's also important to remember that we see that image after having, you know, several weeks of discussion about whether or not, you know, Biden is too old.
Yes.
Right? And so that contrast kind of even more heightens how we understand that image. Mm-hmm.
Well, what about that? We're approaching this probable turning point where apparently, if you can believe any of the reports that are out there, Joe Biden is strongly considering advice that he should drop out of the race. I mean, is there any precedent for anything like this, and how significant would it be to this presidential race?
So not quite to the same extent, and, you know, certainly not since 1996, where we, you know, suddenly have campaigns last 18 months, not 2 or 3 months, right? So we haven't had that. But in the past, I think the closest would be probably 1968 with Hubert Humphrey.
Yes.
When, you know, there were, you know, changes, you know, after Kennedy was assassinated, mm-hmm. Robert, you know, there were changes afoot. Mm-hmm. And Hubert Humphrey decides to jump back into the race. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, you know, all those people who had voted for various candidates along the way, mm-hmm. it's their delegates who are making the decision, not necessarily the first choice of the people who put mm-hmm. those delegates into place. And so now it's, you know, essentially the party who's making the maneuvers.
Mm-hmm.
There's some complications for that. You know, one complication is you know, if things are uncertain, everyone within a party wants their point of view to be the one that's selected. So mm-hmm. there's party infighting. And less coordination. And, you know, and I think that becomes a problem. The other problem is when you get the sense that the party is suddenly choosing, not the people.
Mm-hmm.
There's a question about, is this an authentic, you know, candidate reflecting the people in what's supposed to be, again, a little d democratic process?
And then there's mm-hmm. the name recognition.
And I think people are failing to understand this mm-hmm. point too. Mm-hmm. You cannot be a successful political candidate of any kind if you do not have name recognition. We're not even talking about whether you like the, you know, like the person or not, because we haven't even gotten to that stage. If you don't know who they are, you're less likely to support them, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
And so if you look at the various Democratic, you know, possible alternatives,
yes,
you know, a lot of them are people who had been, you know, fairly popular within the party 15, 20 years ago, but not necessarily now. Mm-hmm. And they're the ones, I mean, you have Barack Obama, who has high name recognition.
Yes.
And then you go down from there, and it's just people who probably would not, if our concern is age, they're not going to, you know, satisfy the public in terms of that.
Mm-hmm.
Below that, you have some people who I think could be mentored into great candidates at some point, but the name recognition at a national level is not yet there.
With so little time.
And I think, yes, the little time. And I think the other thing to keep in mind, and this yeah. is an incredibly important point, there is a thing called Election Day. But that's not when voting starts.
It's right. early voting.
We have several states, Arizona being one, yeah. but there are other states that vote even earlier than Arizona. I was going through the list, yeah. and it looked like there was probably at least seven that are starting 46, 45 days before Election
Whoa,
Day.
40 days?
Yes. Like, so they're starting in September.
So we're talking mid-September.
You're talking September, yeah.
So you have the Democrats having like
a convention
August?
In mid-August, and then early yeah. voting begins a month later, and there could be a new person that's at the head of the ticket? Wow.
So I'm sorry. What I take from what you're saying is that the only immediately visible, viable candidate for the Democrats is Kamala Harris, because she's been on the mm-hmm. national ticket before. She may not be a household name, but at least she's there and she's kind of in the position.
I saw one, I think it was a YouGov poll from, I don't think it's completely fresh, but it was at the time, it was a couple months ago, I think, it was 94% is where she was at on name recognition. And she was one of the few in the top, I mean, she might've been the only one in the top 10 besides, you know, Barack Obama, who was under 70. And so she's that. Plus, there's the issue of the campaign. I think people don't quite understand the importance of having a campaign team that knows what they're doing and candidates who are ready for the national stage. Because mm-hmm. even if you've done some things here and there at the national level, there's a certain intensity to the presidential campaign stage that's different. In past, you know, candidates who have been there have been able to build from being on the national stage through the primaries.
Mm-hmm.
But the Democratic Party does not have that same kind of depth at this point.
Right. So it would have to be somebody, maybe if not Kamala Harris, and somebody who ran maybe when Biden won the primary election. I'm trying to think of the names. Pete Buttigieg is not a very widely known name, but very few people could carry this off, in other words.
I think that would be the concern for the Democrats. You know, Pete Buttigieg, you know, in the thick, when he was running in the primaries, had that name recognition. You can get name recognition, but can you get it in a month?
Mm-hmm.
Which is what we're talking about. Can you get it in a month and then convince not only people that they know who you are, but you're the better alternative to Donald Trump? And so... Mm-hmm. huge concerns for the Democrats. If even where we're going, I think that the media have kind of, you know, gone on this it's a compelling story. It's very dramatic. News media often like the drama in their mm-hmm, stories. Mm-hmm. And so it's a story that sells. It might not be a story right now. I mean, now that's accurate.
Yeah. And Biden isn't, it wouldn't seem that Biden would do something drastic like resign and then Harris would become president. I mean, that would be really a kind of a weird that he decided, well, I'm resigning because of health issues or whatever, then Harris would become president. But that's really far-fetched.
I've heard that scenario talked about,
yes, in the media.
Right, there's all sorts of interesting scenarios mm-hmm. that have been speculated. I assume that both presidential candidates, Trump and Biden, you know, will make, you know, decisions that work for them. And we'll have to see.
Yeah.
One quick note before we let you go about how social media, in the wake of the Trump shooting, how because there was not confirmation right away, it's like social media just exploded with conspiracy theories. I mean, it's like
yes.
It's like folks cannot just wait to find out, even they can't even wait an hour to find out what really happened. They've got to speculate.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you know, part of that's human.
Yeah.
Given devices that make us
into
contact with our
lap.
Thousand yep. closest yep. friends.
Yeah.
I think that it's problematic, but it's also a very human thing to do. I think for a long while, a lot of the focus has been on conspiracies on the right, because I think that when you're in the disadvantaged position, that's mm-hmm. when you are likely to spin these mm-hmm. conspiracy theories. But there were certainly, quite a few on the left. And I guess, as someone who likes knowledge and likes truth, I guess I would hope for patience, which is, mm-hmm. I know, hard to do.
Yeah,
it was fascinating to see them both, to see the conspiracies come out of both sides so quickly. It was almost evenly divided.
I know. Yep. All right, Dr. Kate Kensky, always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Tim Stiller sticks around. I've got a couple of items to talk about with Tim after we take a break. Be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. Home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Very serendipitous to have Dr. Kate Kensky, a well-known and highly respected professor of communication at the University of Arizona. Not only respected here in Arizona, but she's internationally renowned, and we're glad she could work us in with her schedule. Let's see, she's been in Italy, in Australia, and now she just informed Tim Steller. We heard that she's headed to India. So,
heading to Delhi, internationalizing the political communications realm.
So we're midway through the early voting already, Tim. And the kind of the marquee race locally is the Pima County Attorney's race.
Yep.
What? How do you view that?
Well, it's important to remember that Laura Conover, who is the current Pima County Attorney and won last 4 years ago, replaced what was, I think, 40-year
Barbara LaWall,
set of alliances,
and then Barbara was a disciple of Stephen Neely.
Right.
So there was a certain culture there, and you're right, for like almost over 40 years.
Yeah, and that was a big change, and it also happened during COVID, so that made the change even bigger, and then there was a spike of murders the first year that, or maybe it was the year before Laura Conover came into office, so there was a backlog. Anyway, to make a long story short, she represented significant change, and you know that she's being challenged by people who think she went too far, basically.
Right.
Jetty, it's interesting because Mike Jetty, he actually filed to run against Barbara LaWall as a Republican back in 2012. He was going to try to challenge her. There had been stirrings for some time that it was time for her to go, et cetera. So he filed to run as a Republican, and then he backed out. He decided not to. Yeah. He became independent again, and now he's running as a Democrat.
It's just interesting to see a primary generate this kind of interest and a lot of money.
Yep.
Full page ads and the Star and all these letters. Seems like there's a letter to the editor or a different opinion piece.
Every
that'd be one of the races that we're really looking forward to seeing.
Yeah, and the one thing I would say about it is that it feels to me like Democrats, especially the core party members, support Laura Conover.
Right.
And there's a lot of people who support Mike Jetty, but it's a Democratic primary.
Yeah,
so,
Democratic primary.
Having all these big name business people and everything isn't necessarily going to help them at the polls.
I want to ask you about the University of Arizona. They've changed their marketing now again to say, well, you know, when we first heard that U Arizona, even the you guys at the Star never really picked up on that, I don't think, and used that U Arizona, but now it's back. People, what do they know the University of Arizona as?
U of A.
Right? Yeah. And that's the way it's going to be back.
Well, yeah.
UA, I guess.
UA, we use UA, I think, off and on second reference. I mean, I get the reason. Back in 2019, I think it was.
Yeah, 2019.
They introduced the idea of calling it U Arizona. And so, like, their main Twitter account back then, it was called Twitter, was at U Arizona. That they established. And I get it because you don't want to be confused with the University of Arkansas, Alabama, Alaska, Antarctica, et cetera. But
Antarctica or the University of the Arctic, I don't know.
Right.
Maybe that's up in Fairbanks.
That's true. Actually, there is a U of A in Canada. It's the University of Alberta.
Yes, there is. Yeah, I think it's in Edmonton. Anyway,
so the point is, it was, I see the point in trying to differentiate yourself from the other A states and provinces, but you know, there is a attachment as with everything at the University of Arizona in Tucson, there's an attachment to different things. And like people took offense at the idea that the U of A or UA is a bad thing to say.
Yeah.
And scoffed at the kind of marketing branding of
sporting events.
Sure. You don't chant U Arizona. No. You chant U of A.
Yeah. All right. Another one I'm watching very closely, and you are as well. You wrote a column about it, is this the border initiative that, and do you feel that the Supreme Court might just get rid of that? I mean, it's cleared one of the lower courts. Now the state Supreme Court will decide, because there's questions about whether there's multi-issues that are addressed in the border initiative.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the courts tend to be somewhat lenient on these kinds of things. So I can't predict whether they will. I wouldn't be surprised if they don't overturn it's a referendum. I was going to call it an initiative, but it's a referendum from the legislature. So I won't be surprised if they don't. I honestly won't be surprised if they do either overturn it, because the way the referendum was put together, it was kind of cobbled together with different ideas in order to kind of get past the legislature. You had to make compromises. And so it is kind of an awkward fit. There's three or four different parts that rarely fit under the rubric of the border or something like that.
I would not be
like
surprised
that.
If they do toss
now,
it.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I thought it still has to go to the appeals court first, doesn't it? Or does it go straight to the Supreme Court?
I think it may just go right to the Supreme Court, because we're running out of time. Right. And we are running out of time. But quickly, Charles Heller has a quick comment about U of A. Go ahead, Charles.
Yes, there is a legitimate concern there with Alberta ever since the Chinook wind was blowing in. All right. Thank you, guys.
Okay. Tim, what's your column on this Sunday?
I'm going back into this issue that we've discussed so many times in Tucson about political rhetoric and assassination attempts. You know, this is an issue that's being talked about nationally now, and we've been through it because of the assassination attempt on Representative Gabrielle Giffords back in the day. Basically, I think we've solved this riddle before here in Tucson, and I'm sad that we have to try to solve this again. Assassination attempts are rarely even politically motivated. Honestly, they tend to be motivated by personal problems in the assassin's life. And while political rhetoric may be a problem, and polarization certainly is in this country, it's unlikely that that led to this assassination attempt or many assassination attempts in general over our history.
All right. We'll look for your work in the Arizona Daily Star. Thank you, Tim.
Thank you.
All right. Take a break right here, and Weekend Watch coming up with Dan Gibson right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. PIMA Association of Governments, the Greater Tucson Region's metropolitan planning organization, is developing a new long-range transportation plan for the next 30 years. Shape your transportation future and tell us your transportation project and funding priorities. Take the survey at pagregion.com/2055. That's pagregion.com/2055.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Quality of Life Medical Center has served Tucson residents for more than 20 years. We understand the key to a long, healthy life is not just about getting the right medical treatment, but it's also about feeling good mentally and emotionally. Whether you're looking for preventative care or treatment for a specific condition, we're here for you. And we are accepting new patients for primary care, pain management, and sexual health. Please visit QLMC.com to request an appointment. Quality of Life. Our name says it all.
And away we go into the weekend. Time to stir it up and look at the temperature over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, our fine sponsor that presents our weekend watch. 85 midday over in Silver City. I think it sounds like this would be a perfect weekend to get away and enjoy cooler temperatures because of their elevation. Overnight lows around 60. Can't beat that. So check it out. Only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson, southwestnewmexico.org, the starting place before you make your trip over there. Lots of great information there on their website. Tons of stuff to do over in Silver City. Let's welcome now the host of Weekend Watch. Here's Dan Gibson. Hey, Dan.
Hey, how are you?
Good. No mountain lions today over at your place of employment?
Deeply uneventful, actually. It's even remarkably enough not affected by the CrowdStrike outage. It's a very normal day here at TMC.
All right. Great. And we are happy to report that the young mountain lion has been now happily relocated to a mountainous environment.
Yes, out in the wild, Game and Fish did a great job. They have a tracking collar on it as well, so they can continue to do research about their patterns. It all worked out just fine.
All right.
Are you excited about the Clay Festival, the annual Silver City Clay Festival?
Yeah, this is one of their signature events. I'm so glad you brought that up. When is that coming out? Is it soon?
The 27th and 28th.
Okay.
The weekend.
Thank you for bringing
market.
That. Yeah, go ahead.
Functional sculpture work, live music, and food available. Entrance to the market itself as part of the Clay Festival is free, and that's happening at the Murray Hotel. So that's Saturday and Sunday, Saturday the 27th, Sunday the 28th,
Murray.
All happening in beautiful Silver City.
And the Murray is really neat. It's a 1930s Art Deco hotel in downtown Silver City, worth the trip alone just to stay at the Murray. But yeah, thanks for bringing that up, because the Clay Festival is one of their signature events, along with a blues festival they do around the Memorial Day weekend. What else do we have perhaps locally?
Oh, yeah, Tucson. Weekend? Right, exactly. I just want to provide value for the fine sponsors.
Thank you.
Silver City. You know, there's a new food truck in town, Bollywood Pizza Company, which is actually, interesting enough, a collaboration between Empire Pizza, the classic Congress location, and Saffron Indian Bistro, which is up, I believe, on Oracle, I think, in McGee. They have teamed up to do a Indian style pizza truck. They're sort of actually more like flatbreads, but with traditional Indian, familiar Indian dishes, including chicken tikka masala, chana masala, paneer tikka. They're also working on adding poutine and desserts. Everything on them is made from scratch, but they will be at Tap and Bottle tonight from 5 to 9 p.m. if you want to give it a try. You can also bring your food inside, get yourself a nice beverage, make a whole evening of it.
I think I could take one more, Dan.
You got it. Dragoon Brewing is celebrating. It's a locals-only event tomorrow, 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. They will be serving their Honest Lager, which is an annual brew they make for the summertime. Free admission, music by Tucson blues band Tom Walbank, DJ Nada, Pelican Museum, and a food truck as well with barbecue. Should be a good time. I believe there might be some sort of pool as well, and that's happening at Dragoon at 1871 West Grant Road.
All right, Dan Gibson, thanks. Hope you have a great weekend. Thank you, Dan.
You too.
All right, The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. Original theme music composed by my friend Chris Stefan, who lives over in Germany. Thanks to my assistant, Rosemary Brandt, and engineer-producer Tom Fairbanks, the entire team here at KVOI and Bustos Media. All of us wishing everyone well and hope everyone has a safe weekend.